You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of a collected works, volume 165 in Rudolf Steiner's collected works, translated by Christian von Arnim, entitled 13 lectures, entitled Unifying Humanity Spiritually Through the Christ Impulse. This is lecture 8, given in Dornach on the 2nd of January, 1916. Let us imagine the human etheric body in connection with the physical body of the human being. And let us capture it in a diagram. Purely diagrammatically, let this be the etheric body, and there's a drawing. And let us draw the physical body, which of course completely fills the whole human etheric body, with the exception of its outermost parts, like this surrounding in a kind of outer layer by the etheric body. You know, of course, the real relationship. So let this be the physical body and etheric body. And then, in the whole system of the human being, the astral body and capital I are, of course, part of it. Now let us recall that the etheric body of the human being, of course, consists of various types of ether, which we have learned about. The types of ether we have learned about are the warmth ether, the light ether, the chemical ether, which communicates the music of the spheres, and the life ether. Let us consider the light ether today. Certainly the whole of the etheric body consists of an intimate connection, or an organized intimate connection, between these four types of ether. But our intention today is to concentrate particularly on what is light ether in the etheric body. Let us now shade the part of the etheric body that we call light ether. Now, I have frequently emphasized that human beings actually obtain a consciousness of things because they are, basically, in those things with their eye and astral body. Only when awake during the day are the eye and the astral body in the physical body and the etheric body in respect of those of their parts which are not in things. If we take this into consideration, we can say that the reason why we have sense impressions is because things are first revealed to the human eye and also the astral body unconsciously, and that this revelation is then reflected in the sensory tools and their nerve extensions in the physical body. We have repeatedly discussed these things. So, today let us ask, how does the memory work? How does it happen that we have memories of various things, of objects, but also of experiences we have had? Let us consider this question. Let us consider it today quite empirically through observation. Take the case that we meet a person today whom we saw 5 days ago for the first time. We remember that we saw him 5 days ago, and that he told us his name at that time, and that we spoke with him. We say that we recognize that person. What happens in us when we recall a person and are meeting with him some time later in this way? Well, the following must be considered to begin with. While we met the person 5 days ago, our etheric body performed certain movements. We are now always talking about the light ether. The other parts, the warmth part, the chemical part, the life part, are also active, but today we will consider the light part of our etheric body. So, I will even call it light body to begin with. Our etheric body performs certain movements, because the thoughts, which are stimulated by the person whom we have met, reveal themselves to our light body as inner light movements. Apart from seeing the person with our senses, we therefore also have something with regard to the impressions which do not come from the senses, to the extent that our light body performs movements. The whole meeting with the person has therefore consisted of our light body performing all kinds of movements. Imagine that in a quite living way. Imagine that in a quite living way. While you stood in front of the person, while you spoke with him, your etheric body was constantly in movement. What you spoke about with him, what you felt about him, thought about him, all of those things are revealed in the movement of your light body. So, when we see that a person, a few days later, the renewed meeting stimulates our soul, and the stimulus makes the etheric body repeat the movements it performed 5 days ago while we were standing and talking with the person, purely out of its retentive capacity. So when you meet the person again 5 days later, this stimulates the etheric light body to perform the same movements it did 5 days earlier. We are always in the external light ether with a part of our I and astral body during waking consciousness. Sleep happens, after all, because the part of the astral body and I, which is in the physical and etheric body when we are awake during the day, also withdraws into the outer ether. Since we are therefore basically in the outer ether with our I and astral body, and the inner etheric body repeats the movements through its retentive capacity, which it carried out the first time, we then feel what the etheric body performed as movement at the time, and that is memory. Perceiving inner etheric movements from the outer ether, perceiving the movements of the inner light body from the outer light ether, that is what remembering means. So consider, for example, two people face one another in front of you. Let's say the one only sees the face of the other. The etheric body makes certain movements because the one person looks at the face of the other person. Then he goes away. The etheric body retains the tendency to carry out these movements again if stimulated to do so. 5 days later, the two people face one another again. They see one another. The one whose etheric body made the movements sees the other one first. That stimulates his light body to make the same movement again which it made when he saw the face. That comes to expression in the consciousness, in that the consciousness says, I have seen this face before. In other words, the consciousness sees from the outer light ether the inner light movements of the light ether in the person. That is remembering. That is memory as a pure process of observation. We can say the movements that the inner light body makes are seen in the outer light, but they are not seen as light movements. Why are they not seen as light movements in ordinary life? They are not seen as light movements because the light etheric body is inside the physical body. That is why the movements of the etheric body bump everywhere up against the physical body. And by doing so, the light movements of the etheric body are transformed into memories. We do not see the movements of the etheric body, but the ideas which arise because they bump up against the physical body. Those are the memories. Once the physical body has gone, that is, once a person has passed through the portal of death, then the I and the astral body are, of course, initially in the outer ether with much greater intensity until they leave the outer ether after a few days. Then the inner light body is no longer stimulated to produce the ideas which are only possible in the physical body because it bumps up against the physical body. That is why the deceased see everything they have experienced, which the etheric body then causes to fluctuate, to run now that it is free of the physical body and is no longer impeded by it. They see everything in the few days after death, because the etheric body has the constant tendency to produce all those things out of itself, which it has ever performed as movement resulting from the experiences of physical life. The whole of life is run through, fluctuates in the etheric body. And we see it in a tableau. It is projected in a mighty tableau. All the reflected etheric movements are projected in a tableau overview over the past earth life. If we now had the possibility to subdue the physical body to such an extent that we make ourselves independent of the physical body and thus also liberate the etheric body, we can achieve that through certain meditation processes, which are all part of the processes described in title Knowledge of the Higher Worlds, How Is It Attained? Reader's Aside, also known as How to Know Higher Worlds, end of Reader's Aside. Then we could manage in life already. Many manage to do so, not to be bothered by the physical body, so that in remembering, we do not see what arises because the etheric body bumps up against the physical body, but we see the fluctuations, the movements of the etheric body itself. We are then in the outer light ether and see the movements of our light body. Why can't we do that in ordinary life? Why does it not happen when, for example, Miss Scholl approaches Countess Kalkreuth and recognizes her, assuming there is no clairvoyance? Under normal circumstances, Miss Scholl would recall the image in her memory, that is, her perceptual image of Countess Kalkreuth, and would not perceive what she could otherwise perceive, the inner fluctuation of her etheric body. So that she has the inner experience. Ah, so that is how my etheric body kept fluctuating when it approached Countess Kalkreuth. Light would then perceive light, namely the outer, because the eye and the astral body of Miss Scholl would perceive the movements, the constantly inclined movements of her own light body, and would know to interpret them in the right way. So she would also say, these are the movements which my light body has always performed when I have met Countess Kalkreuth. So we would then have the phenomenon that through being in the ether, something we always do because we are outside our physical body with a large part of our eye and our astral body, that through the weaving and undulation of the light ether, we perceive our organized piece of light ether and its movement, light from light, the light that is within ourselves. Why does that not happen in ordinary life? Why do we only perceive the movements resulting from the etheric body bumping up against the physical body? That is so because Ahriman and Lucifer are linked with the earthly world, because Ahriman has chained the physical body so tightly to the whole being of the human being that the etheric body cannot easily free itself. Because this Ahriman has merged the physical body so closely with the etheric body, the light body, and because the spirits serving Ahriman are constantly present, causing the light body of human beings with its fluctuations to be obscured, so that they cannot see it when they are in the light. Demons constantly keep the light body of the human being in darkness. That happens because of what Ahriman has done with the physical body, and incidentally also with the etheric body. We can therefore say, and I want to write this sentence, especially on the blackboard, because it is an important one, if it is possible for the human soul to observe the processes of its own light body from out of the light, then this soul has freed itself from the Ahrimanic forces which otherwise obscure the processes in the light body. What then might a soul that wants to achieve this beg for, long for? Such a soul could say something to specific powers who are in the spiritual world and whom such a soul acknowledges. O, you powers in the spiritual world, let me become knowing in the light world, in the light, from out of my physical body, so that I can observe my own light body? And do not let the power of the Ahrimanic forces be too strong over me, so that they do not make it impossible for me to see what is happening in my light body? I'm going to read that again. O you powers in the spiritual world, let me become knowing in the light world, in the light, from out of my physical body, so that I can observe my own light body. And do not let the power of the Ahrimanic forces be too strong over me, so that they do not make it impossible for me to see what is happening in my light body. So, let me say once more what such a soul might beg for in prayer, out of a longing for certain powers which would be acknowledged by such a soul. Such a soul might say, O you powers, let me consciously in the light look toward the processes of my own light body and subdue, take away the strength and power of the Ahrimanic forces which obscure and darken the processes in my own light body. Let me look consciously at my own light body from out of the light. Let me look at the light consciously from out of the light and take away the powers who prevent me from seeing the light out of the light. What I have told you now, my dear friends, is not just an invented prayer, but that is what Christ, after he had passed through the mystery of Golgotha, taught those to pray who could still understand him in the time which he spent with his more close disciples after overcoming the mystery of Golgotha. And that is part of the understanding, the Gnostic knowledge which these disciples were still able to bring to Christ at that time, and which has disappeared in the way I indicated, about the time, about the centuries when the mystery of Golgotha happened. These souls, which were closely associated with Christ, were able to look up to the power which Christ himself was to them in this way, to beg him for the possibility to observe their own light existence from out of the light, and to hold back the adversary powers of an Ahrimanic nature, so that the vision out of the light was not subdued and obscured in seeing these light movements of the light body. These close disciples of Jesus Christ learned in this time what I have indicated here. That is what they learned. And they knew about the nature of all the things we have discussed today. They knew about it. They learned about it in the time when Christ kept company with them after the mystery of Golgotha. Among the fragments that have remained of the ancient Gnostic wisdom, I also spoke about the Pistis Sophia text. Allow me to read a section from this Pistis Sophia text. The section says, quote, I want to glorify you, O light, because I want to come to you. I want to glorify you, O light, because you are my Savior. Do not leave me in chaos, close quote. When I am outside the physical body here, quote, do not leave me in chaos. Save me, O light, in the heights, because it is you whom I have glorified. You sent me your light through you and saved me. You have led me to the higher places of chaos, close quote. In knowledge outside the physical body, quote, may the spawn of evil, close quote, Ahriman, but it does not say Ahriman, continue quote, which pursue me, sink down into the lower places of chaos. And do not let them come to the higher places so that they see me. And may great darkness cover them, and darkness on top of that. And do not let them see me in the light of your strength, which you have sent me to save me, so that they do not gain power over me again. And the counsel they have taken to take my strength from me, let it not succeed. And how they have said words against me to take my light from me, rather take theirs from them instead of mine. And they said they would take all my light, and they were not able to take it because the strength of your light was with me. because they took counsel without your commandment, O light. That is why they were not able to take my light. Because I have believed in the light, I will not be afraid. And the light is my Savior, and I will not be afraid. Close quote. We think of Ahriman with regard to fear, as we have seen in one of the mystery plays. And now let us take this section of the Pistis Sophia text. Is it not as if it has been saved so that we can say, look here, opponents of modern spiritual science. This new spiritual science says that the light movements of the light body can be seen from out of the light if the opposing Ahrimanic demons do not prevent it. But there was once a time in which that was already known. And there is even a physical piece of evidence from this time in the form of the Pistis Sophia text. Because fundamentally what I read out to you is nothing other than the workings which I set out for you on the basis of the structure of the light body and the sojourn of the soul in the light body itself. But there is no possibility of understanding this section of the Pistis Sophia text without previously having understood what I explained to you earlier. That is why those who pick up the Pistis Sophia text should really say to themselves when they read something of that kind that they do not understand it at all. But they are not modest enough for that. But that is what has to come over us, this great modesty, which with regard to this matter can consist of saying to oneself, yes, here we have a section of the Pistis Sophia text, quote, I want to glorify you, O light, because I want to come to you. I want to glorify you, O light, because you are my Savior. Close quote. When I read it like that, I do not understand it. But this humility is what we need. This modesty of not wanting to understand it until we have obtained for ourselves the possibilities of understanding. But such modesty does not exist anywhere, particularly in our time. And those who pull such texts out of the rubble and ruins are often the ones with the least of such modesty. Either they interpret such texts in the most superficial way possible by saying, quote, well, the light is a nebulous idea. It is all meant as an allegory. Close quote. Or alternatively, they say, quote, those who wrote these things in ancient times were at a childlike stage of human development. And we have finally made magnificent progress. Close quote. You will recall Wagner's words from yesterday. We have finally made such magnificent progress that we can see that these predecessors, with all their understanding, were just at a childlike stage. It is not just a matter in our time that a teaching cannot be understood by those who do not want to understand it, but it is a matter that in our time a certain soul mood cannot so easily be produced, which is absolutely necessary if true spirit knowledge is to be obtained. This soul mood is the mystery mood, which consists of developing a feeling within oneself. Quote, we cannot understand something until we have prepared the soul so that it can enter into such understanding. Close quote. In our time, on the contrary, there is a soul mood that the clever person, and of course every adult is clever today in their own opinion, can make a judgment about everything. But the world is profound, and everything connected with the secrets of the cosmos is profound. And because of this belief in cleverness, which every adult today has about themselves, people simply pass by the most profound cosmic problems, the most profound secrets of the cosmos. And when these secrets of the cosmos are talked about, they respond to the speaker at most with ridicule and scorn, and cast these things into obscure recesses about which they write their vignettes, superstition and mania and fantasy, if not much worse. The important thing, my dear friends, is to see this situation clearly. That is the important thing, to see clearly how in our time those who have no intention of understanding anything cast ridicule and scorn on the things that can only be reached in modesty and humility of knowledge, by the soul prepared in modesty and humility. To begin with, it is not just an understanding of spiritual scientific truths which is missing, but to begin with, a mood for knowledge is absent in our time, that mood which produces a true striving for knowledge. But the world is dependent on some people, and increasing numbers of people, seeing this clearly, and making a start by including in their interest and attention that this is where the lever of true progress has to be applied. Read that sentence again. But the world is dependent on some people and increasing numbers of people, seeing this clearly, and making a start by including in their interest and attention that this is where the lever of true progress has to be applied. We have to know to begin with what needs doing. And clearly, and without indulging in any illusions, we have to see how the effort is being made by those who pour ridicule and scorn over all true moods for knowledge to take control of what is still meant to permeate humanity in its spiritual culture. The aim is to make human beings part of a materialistic culture from childhood. Materialistic culture takes control even of the delicate souls of children, in that it forces these delicate children's souls into materialistic schools, which make the soul materialistically pliable less through the content of what they teach than through the way in which they do so. And such action is packaged in the illusion of the times by saying that this is what is required in the age of liberalism and freedom. The opposite of freedom is called freedom in the materialistic age. And things are organized in such a way that people hardly notice that the opposite of freedom is called freedom. And those who have some inkling of what is going on at most want to combat this lack of freedom, in turn with the same lack of freedom only from the other side. This or the other should be prohibited, say some of them. Or others, in turn, flirt with those powers who take control of everything which should grow in freedom like the flowers in the fields. The first thing that is required is that we should be permeated by the attitude which can only be a truly free attitude coming from spiritual science. We have to be clear above all that we cannot introduce into the development of the outer materialistic world order the things that are needed to bring up the human soul in childhood. Not being taken in by words is the first thing we should understand. But that requires that we free ourselves from the whole aura of the prejudices which we encounter everywhere. That under all circumstances we really feel the attitude living in our soul which can arise from the nature of spiritual science. That we frequently ask ourselves, what exists in our soul that comes from the nature of spiritual science, and what exists in our soul only because we also adopt those forms of thinking which swarm through the world today? It may well be that we cannot yet do anything in our age against all the materialistic progress of the materialistic mood of the times, with its lack of freedom. But at least we have to learn to experience this as a constraint. That is where we have to start. Neither must we indulge in illusions. Because if the world continues on its present course, as it strives to do in the spirit of these materialistic impulses, then we will gradually enter a development in which not only those who do not have title are prohibited from doing anything for human health, but in which every word will be banned which is spoken about anything related to science by anyone other than those who have sworn some kind of oath not to say anything other than what is authorized in the spirit of the materialistic world order. Today it is still much the case that only things are banned so that people do not feel the ban as a coercion. But we are heading toward times in which, just like any kind of unregistered care to heal people, every word will also be banned which is spoken, except in facilities which have been guaranteed and granted title by the materialistically evolved powers. If we fail to see where this development is going, we will travel full stream ahead into the freedom of the future, in quotes, which will consist of laws being made according to which no one will be allowed to teach anything who does not do so within a registered lecture theater, according to which everything will be banned, which even remotely reminds us of things such as are happening here, for example. We do not look at these things today because we do not realize where this development is going. It is certainly true, we have to keep emphasizing this, that we will not be able to do a lot in our age. But these things have to start with a thought, have to start with a feeling for what is at stake, and we have to start from where we are. However these words may be received, my dear friends, I have to say them to you at this turn of the year, because its celebration is a kind of symbol in our time, for the course of the ages is such. Because it is best, when we celebrate the turn of the year, if we draw attention to what lies in the course of the ages. We simply cannot do enough to keep making clear to ourselves how dependent human beings are today on judgments which are swarming all around us, on judgments specifically which are swarming all about because they are recorded in the papers with smudgy ink. And this smudgy ink is an infinitely effective magic potion with regard to all the things that people believe in the world. It is interesting, then, to see the occasions when these gentlemen of the press are not quite in agreement among themselves. Because, you see, there is that which floods all minds, that which is magicked onto the dirty paper with smudgy ink, and which exercises such an incredible magic on the whole of humanity today. But there are, of course, always a few who think that we should believe what it says on this dirty paper using smudgy ink in this or that particular way, and others who want to proclaim as irrefutable truth what is magicked on paper in different words written in smudgy ink. They are at odds with one another, and so people could see where the actual error and harm lies. Except that the person who comes from the right in the newspaper office merely says it is the fault of the person who, of course, finds their belief on the left. And so it is of interest to call up some words before our soul, which, for example, a certain Dr. Edward Engel has written in the Türmer of 1911. Readers, aside, Türmer is spelled T-U-R-M-E-R, Türmer, end of readers aside. It was headed, quote, "On the Psychology of the Newspaper Reader," close quote. I do not want to say too much myself about these things, so I want to show you what people sometimes say when they judge one another among themselves. So in title, "On the Psychology of the Newspaper Reader," from Türmer, 1911, page 230, it says, quote, "The newspaper reader is a very complex being, but his numerous less important characteristics are overshadowed by two others. He believes everything, and he forgets everything. The whole secret of the incredible development of the daily papers is based on these two main characteristics, which are present in each newspaper reader. He believes everything, and he forgets everything. The papers are one of the essential features of the modern cultured person. The vast majority of readers read only one newspaper and believe what they read. Their view of the world in the evening is the one which they scooped out of their newspaper in the morning. If they meet a person who reads another newspaper and holds forth about his, that is, his newspaper's view, that man appears insane, or at least paradoxical to them. Newspaper editors, who have a particularly subtle understanding of the soul of their readers, nurse their delicate belief in the papers with anxious attention. A newspaper will never print a correction for the great masses of what it has told its readers. Even in the not infrequent cases in which an erroneous report has presented the opposite of the truth, and complete nonsense. They guard against shattering the belief of their readers in the infallibility of newspapers. But now and again they are forced to report the truth a few days later. Here they are assisted by the second indispensable characteristic of the newspaper reader, his forgetfulness. Close quote. If we consider the power which the papers have gradually acquired in the 19th century and into our day, and the part which the belief in the paper plays in the whole declining part of our culture, it is necessary occasionally to take a look at the whole miserable situation. It is this which sometimes also makes one uncomfortable, that there is such great demand to transform the form of communications which we have chosen, which should be something different, into a form of printed storage. And it cannot be different, of course, because the black art is a fact of life, and the white art, in quotes, too, has to take account of this black art, which comes to expression on printed paper. Of course, we have to have books and lecture cycles, but we should be truly aware that we must act in such a way that the matter which has now been entrusted to the printed page should under no circumstances travel through the world like the things which habitually swarm through the world today. Let me use the expression, quote, on the wings of the papers out into the minds of the people, close quote. I wanted to give a clear impression that things are serious. That is why I permitted myself yesterday and today to append to the great mysteries, such as those of the human year on earth, and seeing the light in the human being out of the light, to append to these great mysteries of existence, these contemporary observations, also as a kind of New Year's reflection. The end of Lecture 8.